Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I am Leona Abraham Brando, host for Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. We have on with us again our special guest, Mariam Jacobs, psychosocial therapist and BA philosopher from the Netherlands. Mariam is going to be talking, as always, about the comparisons between the prisons in the Netherlands and other countries in comparison to the prisons in the United States. I want to introduce Mariam Jacobs this morning. Are you with us, Mariam? Mariam, can you hear me? Let's try this again.
Can you hear me? Yes, I can hear you.
How are you this morning?
Yes, I am very fine. And good morning to you.
Good morning.
For me, it's afternoon, as you know.
Yes, Mariam is in the Netherlands, and that is six hours ahead of us. So while we are having this show at 9 o'clock a.m. Eastern time, we have Mariam with us 6 hours later in the Netherlands. And we also have with us Sandy Fries, a cognitive behavioral therapist from Indiana. Sandy, are you on with us as well? Sandy, are you on with us?
I am. Good morning.
Good morning. I think you're on the same time zone we are on, so you are also at 9 a.m. Eastern.
Yes, correct.
We have a beautiful day today. How is it in the Netherlands, Mariam?
The weather is not so nice. It's rainy and cold, but it's still winter here, so we almost have spring, so the good weather will come.
Yeah.
always stay positive, huh?
That's it. I'd still rather be in the Netherlands than to be here, that's for sure. It may be raining
right
now.
Yeah, it's better. Yeah, the prisons in the rain is in the Netherlands is better than the prisons in the sun in the United States.
Really?
That's very true.
They used to say it's always greener on the other side, and I believe it now. The saying is sometimes we wish to be somewhere on another planet or something, and they say, yeah, the grass is always greener on the other side, but look at this. Yeah. I think it is. But anyway, to get started, I'd like to have you, Mariam, introduce yourself again. Everyone probably already knows of you, but please introduce yourself, and then Sandy.
Yes, more multiple people know, my name is Mariam Jacobs. I come from the Netherlands. I work with incarcerated men in the Netherlands with a program called Deeper Justice. I find it very important or crucial even to meet the human being behind the crime, because a crime is never an isolated act, but it's always embedded in all kinds of influences in the incarcerated man and around him. So it's very important to get insight in the web of influence for the incarcerated man or woman, him or herself. And I travel with incarcerated people when they are on their journey to more insight. I am almost finishing graduating for my master's philosophy. I'm writing my thesis now, and it's about the subject incarcerated in the United States. I also write a book about incarceration in the United States, and what I do in that book is in fact the same as what I do with incarcerated people. So I try to deconstruct, to understand the system itself, and also the environment, the country where it's embedded in. So because the system always reflects the environment. So I try to get to more awareness about it, and I hope that my book can contribute to more awareness in society about what is really going on behind the surface, behind what we see in the news, in articles. But so I think that could be, of value. And that's my story for today.
You know, you mentioned working with the men in this program called Deeper Justice. You know, I wish we had. And you mentioned that there's always something behind the crime. You know, it's not just an isolated crime. There's always a reason behind any crime. And I wish there were more people in the United States that were working with prisoners that looked at it that way. Because you're right, there is always something behind the crime, what causes it. And I really want to hear more about that when you get into that, because that's something that people don't think of usually when they think of someone committing an offense. Sandy, do you want to introduce yourself and then we can move forward?
Yes, Sandy Freese. I am a cognitive behavioral therapist and a neuro-linguistic programmer, and I also advocate for justice. I have a couple of Facebook groups, Factually Innocent and Injustice, Reform and Reentry. My business is called Victory from Chaos, and my email is sandyfreese63@gmail.com.
Thank you so much. Sandy has also been co-hosting a lot of the interviews I've been doing. It's been a big help because sometimes I either maybe don't remember something that I may need to ask a question, or there's some interruption I may get from a call or something like that. So Sandy's been really good in helping with the co-hosting as well. Why don't we start with the things that go on, first of all, in the communities where it comes to crime. I want to say one thing. There are so many people out in the communities that we are walking around all the time when we get out there. People that we may be smiling at, or they may smile at us. People that may look angry or hurt or painful. I remember one time I was in a country, I believe it was Panama, and there was a woman walking down the street. And she was crying her heart out. She was just crying and crying and crying. And she was saying, Allah, Allah. So I assume she was Muslim. But she was in so much pain and agony. I don't know what it was, because at the time, I couldn't speak the language. But these are some things. There are people in the communities. There are people out there that are so full of pain. And sometimes we see that pain in the way they react. We see it in body language. We see it in the tears. We see it in the, you know, the suffering. It's in their face. It's in their eyes. But then there are some that are resilient. And no matter what happens in their lives, they seem to spring right back up again. And you don't see that pain and sorrow and suffering. But you may see it eventually in the addictions. Because a lot of times people take that pain and they try to cover it up. They try to cover it up with alcohol. They try to cover it up with drugs or whatever they can. So this is why there's such an epidemic in this country of mental illnesses, addictions. And people all the time think because someone is on drugs or alcohol, they're no good. They look at these people that are crying in the streets and that are showing their pain and suffering, and they look at them as weak. They don't look at the people who are out there doing good. They may be in school, they may be working, they may be going to the gym, they may be doing a lot of these things. But what they fail to look at is these people that are doing that are also covering up their pain, because many take to the gyms or take to jogging or take to being in school all the time, even after graduating, going back to school for another degree or something. They don't seem to realize this is their way of coping. This is their way of venting. They have to be doing something with their lives every second of the day. And in the prisons, when these people finally can't be resilient any longer, when they can't cope any longer, and a crime is committed, they go into the prisons, and all of their mechanisms to cope with, everything is gone now. Because in the prisons, they're being denied, deprived of using the gym, or they're being denied or deprived of taking educational correspondence courses or any courses. They're being denied everything that was their mechanism to cope before going to prison, before committing that offense. And I just want to throw that out there because people do not realize when they're walking amongst others in the communities. Also, even in your own homes, you may have a son or a daughter. You may have any siblings. You may have any relatives whatsoever that live in your home. Sometimes you don't even know their pain and suffering. This is why I say it's very important to have communication, not only with your loved ones, but anyone, even in the streets. If you're alone, you don't have to talk to anyone. But if you're on a bus and there's people all around you, say hello. Try to strike up a conversation. Try to show some kind of compassion for others, or even some kind of interaction that's not so negative. And I just wanted to bring that out. And Marion, I will let you get back to what you were saying. And then Sandy, you as well. Thank you so much. And I'm not going to say anything for a while.
You know, Miriam, were you saying something?
I was thinking about what Leonard said. But tell me what you want to say, Sandy.
You know, if I could just take maybe a minute to read. I was asked by an organization in Ohio to write on the topic for their newsletter that's coming out. And so I decided to write about aging on death row. And the name of my article is Respect Thy Elders, Aging on Death Row. On November 19th, 2020, James Frazier, the oldest death row inmate in the state of Ohio, escaped execution. Any celebratory feelings we may feel for 79-year-old Mr. Frazier quickly diminish. He wasn't found innocent of the murder he was convicted of in 2005, nor was his execution vacated. According to a prison spokesperson, COVID-19 was the suspected cause of death. The wheelchair-bound 79-year-old was suffering from severe vascular dementia when he left this world. Not only did James have no memory of the crime he was convicted of, but he was unable to comprehend why he was to be put to death. On November 14th of 2017, James was found by authorities in his cell, covered with feces and urine. According to medical reports, he had suffered from a series of mini strokes. Unable to walk, speak coherently, or accomplish simple daily tasks, James was eventually moved from Chillicothe Correctional Institution to the Franklin Medical Center. It was here that he would await his impending execution. One quarter of the 2,620 death row inmates in the United States are over the age of 60. Many suffer from failing health due to age, as was the case of Mr. Alvin Campbell, also from Ohio. Witnesses watched for 30 minutes while executioners searched for a suitable vein, sticking him twice in the right arm, once in the left arm, and once in the left leg. One witness recalls that after being stuck in the leg, Mr. Campbell threw his head back and appeared to call out in pain. What the witnesses did not see was that this had already gone on for an hour. Prior to this November day in 2017, Alva Campbell was diagnosed with lung cancer, PD, and prostate cancer. Campbell required oxygen treatment four times a day. Because the execution was unsuccessful, it was rescheduled for June of 2019. Alva Campbell, as did James Frazier, evaded execution. He was found unresponsive in his cell. In March of 2018, he died of natural causes. 35 of our elderly incarcerated citizens over the age of 60 were executed within the last 10 years, 15 since 2015 alone. Walter Moody waited over 30 years before his execution took place in Alabama. He was 83, making him the oldest inmate in the modern era to be executed. His life was taken on April 19, 2018, by way of lethal injection. Walter Moody, was the eighth inmate over the age of 65 that was put to death since 2015. The Eighth Amendment clearly states that excessive bail or fines will not be imposed. Parole and unusual punishment is the third clause of this amendment, which was added to the Constitution on December 15, 1791. Does pricking an individual to the point that he cries out in agony seem cruel or unusual? Does it seem cruel to take the life of an individual suffering from terminal illness? Would you be willing to inject a wheelchair-bound individual that had no recollection of his crime and couldn't understand the very premise of the death penalty? These are not isolated cases, nor were these men just numbers in the system. May compassion guide us to perseverance and solidarity. Change is needed and change is possible. That's that. But I kind of thought maybe that would fit in, you know, with the things we so often discuss on the show.
I think that the elderly prisoners, they really show by their beings in the prison system how useless and senseless the whole system is. You can see it by them because it does not make any sense what they are doing with them.
No, and you know, like I said, that's not isolated. I mean, it's just unbelievable.
It does not make any sense. And that's, I think they reflect that the whole system doesn't make any sense. You can see it mostly, I think, when you look at the elderly people, because there is no goal, no use. There is only this problem which cannot be solved, because they did get the death penalty or life without parole, and now you see how useless these sentences are, because it doesn't make sense at all. It's a waste of life, of divine life, in fact.
Yeah, and you know,
I think that that's the lesson they show us.
Yeah.
That's a lesson.
I'm certainly not the same person I was 10 years ago. And many of these people that are in death row have been in there, you know, for over 20 years. They're not the same as they were. Many of them have grown and have become people we don't want to lose. They're beneficial. They're not. They've changed. If we believe in change.
Yeah, I think what society needs to understand is that we do not deny the crime they have committed. People in prison are there because they did commit a crime and they are responsible for it. I think that lots of people in society, they don't think further. They want revenge. They are angry without knowing what they are talking about if they have not been involved in any way in crime or incarceration. And I think that a lot of people in society have this idea that when you advocate for these people, that you deny the crime or you'll make them victim or whatever. And I think society needs to be aware of the fact that when we advocate for these people, we do not deny the crime. We know they are responsible for what they did, but we know that revenge is not a solution. And that's, in fact, what the elderly people show, simply by living in there and showing how useless it is. So I think a lot of work lies in making public, which is not involved in incarceration, crimes or whatsoever, more aware of what is happening in their country, because the prisons are present in your own country. But I think they have to see that there is this prisoner, he has committed a crime, there has to be a form of punishment, but revenge is simply not the solution. Only the time inside the prison should be the punishment, but the way you incarcerate should be rehabilitation. And from what I see is that to the outside world, there is a nice picture is presented of rehabilitation. It's even in the law you see back that the goal of incarceration is rehabilitation, but in reality the opposite is happening, and that's what people really have to become aware of, because it's also dangerous, you know, if you see how many people fall back, get back in prison, and the public has to become aware of what, you know, society is doing with 2.2 million people behind bars, and that's not the solution. It's crossing lines of life, and an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth doesn't work.
No, it does not work. And unfortunately, that's one of the many issues that go on. You know, we speak about those who are mentally ill. We speak about those, you know, there are states that have dropped the age where an individual can be tried as an adult. Some states have dropped that age to 12.
Yeah, it's crazy. But another thing which is crazy, we talked about it the last time, is that they close all these psychiatric institutions. You know, when they developed the medication for depression, bipolar disorder, etc. And then they gave them these medications and they closed all the psychiatric hospitals. So what you see is not... You know, the prison system is, in fact, not a prison system. It's simply an institution where they put everybody who is in the way of reaching the American dream. That's minorities, that's poor people, that's people with disorders, drug addiction, you know. People who are on drugs, if they have multiple problems with coping with their lives in society. Because, you know, if you get stoned, you can forget your life. Why do you want to forget your life? Because you cannot you cannot find your spot in the world. So instead of helping these people by becoming who they are, finding their own spot in the world, discovering their own talents, developing their talents, they throw them in prison. So prison is not, and that's, I think, very important. It's a melting pot of everything. You have a melting pot of cultures, and you have now a melting pot of minorities and all the people who are not able to exactly walk that line which is expected. It's not a prison. It's also a psychiatric hospital. It's also a home for homeless people. It's a mix of everything. It's not just a prison.
No.
It's no. It's a kind of a melting pot. And
absolutely.
Great.
And you know, and then you look at the addicts. You know, people that are addicted to drugs. If our system was set up for rehabilitation, there would not be so many suicides that take place within.
No, and I think if it was set up for rehabilitation, the largest group of its inhabitants would not be in prison. They would be in hospitals. They would be in treatment to get rid of your addiction and to build your own life. So, and there would be good nursery homes for elderly people. So you would have a smaller group only by dividing all these groups, which are now mixed up in these big warehouses. There is only one, a small part, which really has committed a crime, has a criminal record, and is there to pay for what they've done. That's only a small group who is real prisoners. The rest is all victims of, you know, that all these basic needs fellow. Yeah, how do you say it? These institutions fell away, like hospitals, etc. And that's, I think, the saddest thing that you have when you look at one person, that only one part is really a prisoner, and the rest is has all kinds of other problems and should not be in prison. There is no forensic psychiatry. We have here hospitals, you know, psychiatric hospitals, but we also have forensic psychiatry, which is only for people who have committed a crime because they had a psychiatric disorder. So they get punishment, but it's very short because they also get treatment in this hospital. If someone is a schizophrenic, for instance, and he commits a crime, you can put him in jail for 5 years or 10 years or 20 years, but if he still has the same psychiatric problems and you release him, he is going to commit a crime again because nothing has changed. See, so it doesn't make sense. And then I think, which part is more psychiatric, the society or the prison system?
Yes.
You see, the decisions, the political decisions are sick. You know, it's not only the prison, but the foundation in which it could be developed and can be maintained. It's a sick foundation. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense. The only sense there is to be made is that it fills the pockets of the big corporations.
That's it. That is exactly right. And, you know, we can't deny that recidivism rates are so high because they're not being helped in any way once they, if they do have an opportunity to be released, they're released with nothing. And they don't have a fresh start. So many of them fall back into the same way of life they were in before, and they end up reoffending, which is bringing more money back to those very people that let them out.
Yeah, it's a goal to keep the prisons filled for the corporations. They lobby in the White House for a certain quota, and they use that word as if it's about animals or whatever. They want to have a certain quota that has to fill the prison. And in exchange of that, they pay huge amounts of money to politicians for the elections. And that's the whole big problem. And in society, I think that in the United States society, it's life is much harder than here, because in the Netherlands, we have a welfare state. So we have our very basic needs like housing, like if you cannot get a job or whatever, we have there's housing for everybody, food, you know, these basic needs are fulfilled. So we do pay more taxes, but that's a choice, a political choice we all make, that we are prepared to pay more taxes so that everybody has an equal chance to get these basic needs, and from there they can develop themselves in an individual way, because we are, you know, we don't need to be afraid to lose our homes or whatever. But there are so many homeless people in your country, people who are hungry, people who have no access or very difficulties with getting access to health care. Those are very basic needs. If I have cancer, I don't need to lie awake if I can pay the bills, because it's taken care of. And those are basic needs. So if you are, you know, you have personal problems and you are in society and you have to fight so hard and you can't cope with it, you end up in criminality, you end up in prison. After incarceration, you go back to the same society, you meet the same problems, and you have the circle. I think that's also very important. You know, if you have a lot of money, I think the United States is paradise to live in. You have space, you have nature. It's such a beautiful country. But if you do not have the money, then it's getting hard. So a large group is falling apart of that.
Yes. And, you know, we are such a culture of wanting to be seen as affluent, you know, and I think that all has a lot to do with our prison systems, because we're either affluent or we are not. There's very little middle ground there.
Yeah. Yeah, the United States, that's how we look at it. The United States is really a country of opposites, clashing opposites. You know, there is less negotiation. There are, what you say, the middle part is very small. It's one side or the other side. And you also see that back in politics. You know, we have elections in 2 weeks, I believe. We have multiple parties who have to, we can have three parties or four parties, and they have to negotiate when they are elected to rule. And in the United States, it's only the blue side or the red side. And that's what you see back in society. You are good or you are bad. There's a lot of judgment. And when you are bad, you have to be locked up. That's it. If you're bad, you're locked up. And that makes it very difficult because I don't see the nuances. You know, if you look in prison and you have five people who have murdered somebody, then all these murderers are different, and all these, so the crime is the same, you know, it's murder, but still every murder is different. You can't compare because it's individual with the, you know, everybody has his own motivation. And I always say the intention, looking at the intention of the crime is as important as looking at the crime itself.
And you know, the death penalty definitely. Yes,
the
death penalty does not cut down the amount of murders in this country. You know, if they're trying to say, well, if we put this person to death, it's going to dissuade others from committing this type of crime. But it doesn't. If you look at, I think it's Public Policy Initiative, maybe. But there's a graph, and this is for punishment. This is for getting back on these people. You know, think of the word. But yeah, it's not based. The death penalty is not based to dissuade.
No, and the death penalty, it's so old-fashioned. It's so Middle Ages or less, you know. I mean, you know, in the Middle Ages, they did that on the market square. And now they're doing behind bars. It's the same, it's barbaric. Life without parole and death penalty, it's barbaric. It's crazy to do that in this time. It's so undeveloped. It's so, you know, we are, we think we are the West, high standard societies. Come on, what is this? This is crazy. It really is. A life without parole, it's the same. It's the same. It's, that has nothing to do with rehabilitation or whatever. That only has to do with revenge. Taking a life for a life is
right.
Yeah, but I think it's all, you know, connected. How the society thinks, they want to have the American dream, which is about money. You know, if the American dream would be that, for me, the Dutch dream for me, I mean, my country is not paradise either. Let me say that too. But, you know, the American dream is only about status, about money. It's not about the opportunity to become who you are, to develop your authentic being, which I think is a purpose of life. But it's only about money.
You know,
I agree.
Of money, the director of Cost of Prisons what Sandy did, brought up emails to all the members of the people in the coalition, a case of an individual incarcerated, and it was a sad situation. Another, he was wrongfully convicted and everything. But one of the things is the advocates that are listening would say, well, we know all this. We know about these individual cases because we're dealing with them all the time. What about the solution? So this is my question, too. For our political leaders, first of all, I think they need to step up. The media needs to change their biased ways and stop reporting only what happens on the side of the overseers and not reporting the deaths of those who are the victims in prison. They committed their crime, they're serving their time, and they're still being punished. And they were victims,
yeah.
Most of them, as we were talking about, we encounter these people in the streets all the time. We ourselves have problems, and we're walking in the streets. No one knows that we are suffering or going through some kind of tribulation. So these are the problems. Even the politicians have things that happen in their own lives. But fortunately, they're on the side where they can either cover up or they can undo what's been done or they can get it fixed. Lawyers the same way. Law enforcement the same way. These are overseers that somehow manage to look good in the eyes of the public all the time. No one is good 24/7. Everybody has issues. So we need to find out what they're going to do about it. And as I say, most people know about these situations, about these wrongfully convicted on death row, about these people serving life of wrongful convictions or first-time offenses. The three strikes law. Where did that ever happen? It came out of California. Three strikes law puts people in prison for life without parole. And a lot of these three strikes are not even, they're minor.
Yeah.
This is what people need to hear. How can we resolve it? And how can these people that are so righteous stand back and watch all these things happening and not make any efforts at all to resolve the issue?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, Leona, and what you were, I'm sorry, Miriam, go ahead.
Yeah, well, I only wanted to add that society should ask itself, what is wrong with us that this system can exist? Because the system reflects society. What are you, you know, if you put people to death in prison and so on, what then you are also harming yourself as a society because these people are part of society. You can take all the rights away from them, like voting rights, all the rights. They still stay human. They don't become another species. And you can put them behind walls, but whatever you do, what you want to do, they are part of society. So what do you want to lock up? What do you deny as a society from yourself? Because locking up another person is also locking away a part of yourself. So where comes this denial from? There is a collective denial in society. That's what I see. And there is so much competing. People all the time competing. And if you can't cope with this hard way of competing, you are lost. And you get into criminality or whatever, and you are lost. You are not accepted anymore. You are nothing anymore. Why? What is wrong in society? And society has to make a choice in this. Really?
Collectively. Collectively, yes. And, you know, I was listening, you know, Leona, as you were speaking about these politicians and these media people and all of this and how they have issues themselves or they have a family member that has issues. This makes me think of growing up in the church that I grew up in. If a teenage girl became pregnant, she was so looked down on. If she did not publicly ask for forgiveness for her sin, she was withdrawn from.
Yeah.
Completely. Not allowed to come back. Does that mean she was worse because she actually got pregnant than those of us who were having sex and didn't get pregnant? Because we were doing the same thing, but it wasn't out there in the open.
I think that's exactly an example of how the whole society works. You could apply this for example on all kinds of issues, also the prison system issue, because the pattern is the same. People have to learn to suspend judgment. First, look at what is happening. Suspend judgment. That's what we learned in philosophy. It was a very valuable lesson. Suspend your judgment and first research and look what is happening. People are very judging, condemning, finger pointing, and competing.
And you know that is so true. And you wonder how, I mean, are they even able to develop a sense of compassion, or have they become like the Stepford Wives, which was a film from the 1970s, where all of these women looked exactly the same, walked exactly the same, spoke exactly the same, because where they would put some kind of a computerized device in these women's head, almost like a lobotomy. Is that what our society has become?
Yeah, it looks like it, yes. And I think also that society is responding this way and behaving this way because out of fear, to look at themselves. Who dares to look in the mirror at himself and look at what he sees? You know, because finger pointing to other person, condemning other person, is mostly out of fear to look at yourself. Because, you know, the other person, you see yourself reflected in the face of the other person. And that's,
you know what,
it's a kind of fear.
You know what I see in this country? I don't know about other countries, but I know in this country, people are so insecure. I mean, people in positions too. Now, even with, I'm just bringing this up because I'm not much into, I'm very interested in politics, but I'm not one that's going to vote for anybody I don't care for. And I don't care for a lot of these people running, whether it be Democrat or Republican. But one of the things I find is even with the politicians, with the Republicans and Democrats, there were some Republicans that one minute they seemed like they were leaning towards agreeing the bipartisan, agreeing with the Democrats, and then shortly after they changed their mind. It's almost like they're afraid to make up their own minds. They have to go along with their peers to fit in. We have this in society today. Even in the media, as you were mentioning, Sandy, if you notice, they all want to act the same, dress the same, and they want to put the focus more on themselves than on the news. And this is, I'm not watching the news to watch the people that are presenting the news, that are talking. I'm watching the news to listen to the news. We have these people that giggle. I mean, they're young, they're giggling, they're trying to keep up with their peers and making these stupid jokes. Who in the heck wants to listen to jokes? They talk about the lizards. They talk about the fish. They talk about all these things that don't have anything to do with real news. And we have serious, serious things that are going on, not only in America, but throughout the world.
Yeah.
And sometimes, every now and then, you'll hear them talking about something going on in another country or something going on in another state. But with the number of people that make up the world, to have an hour news talking about sports and talk, I mean, years ago when I was growing up, they had a special station for sports, for people that were interested in sports. And there's a lot of us that don't have any interest at all in sports, but yet we have to go through all that to get the news. And then we have to go through all the lizards and the fish and the birds and all these things to get to the news. This is how insecure and where the priorities lie in the United States of America. And right now they should be lying on the phone. And they think that they can go in other countries and tell other countries how to live, how to have things going on in their countries when we're the worst country in the world. We have
And these people that live, live lives that are just so superficial. When they grow older, what kind of wisdom have they gleaned? How are they going to feel when they look in the mirror at 80 years old and they see the shell of the beautiful person that was them, you know, 40 years ago. And they've gleaned no wisdom, and they've given the world no meat for the soul. That's sad.
Yeah, I think the biggest problem I seen in a documentary on YouTube, I think it was, about how corporations are developed. That shocked me, because what you see in the nowadays world, and it's also there were two documentaries. One was called The Social Dilemma, the other one was called The Corporations. Nowadays, and that's worldwide, it's not only in the United States, the world is led by corporations. And corporations also manipulate politics. They stand above the politics. They make the laws. They make the rules. We think that legislatures make laws, but that's no longer the case. It's the corporations.
Yeah.
Because they influence politics for money, and politics listens to corporations. And social media functions on artificial intelligence, specialized computers that work the same way as a human brain works. And they are capable of mapping our psyche, and then step by step by step influence our psyche. We don't feel it, we don't experience it, but it happens. And it's all about getting access to our wallet. So we are the products of the corporations. And I think it's very important to have this in mind. This is very huge, but the prison system, and especially the growing privatizing of the prison system, works exactly the same way. You see, we are advocating for these people because we see 2.2 million people. Corporations only see money, and we know that, but it's worldwide, and the prison system, mass incarceration, is a part of that. They decide how many people have to be incarcerated for the money. So if the prison would, you know, if we would have half of the people in prison, then the corporations have a problem. And that's, then you can wonder yourself, what kind of society is this becoming?
Yeah.
That we are like these robots that you described, Sandy.
Yeah,
we are no longer human, because diversity is killed, and diversity is one of the most important elements of life. Life is diversity, is authenticity, and if you kill diversity, then you kill human race. In the end, it abolishes them.
Yes.
That's what I also think about when I think about the virus, you know.
Just so much, there's so much out there. And it just upsets me to know that there are people out there that are doing the same thing, but they're walking because of their titles or their uniforms. And the public will give them credit, knowing that those people are worse, because the ones that are inside have problems. That's what led to their incarceration. They have mental health problems, or they have addictions, or they have anger management, and they should be in long-term residential treatment facilities rather than in a prison, where the overseers, who are supposed to be normal, have worse situations, because here they are beating and killing prisoners and getting away with it. And somebody mentioned, Sandy, you mentioned that these COs and these prison officials were in the military. Big deal. Look what happened to the Capitol with those that were in the military.
Exactly.
My father, my four brothers, and my two sisters were all in the military, from the Army to the Air Force to the Marines. They were all in the military. and they did their job. They didn't come back and they didn't brag about it, and they didn't go gung-ho and try to get people to give them all kinds of medals because they served their country. My younger brother died just a few years after coming back from Vietnam. They thought it was Agent Orange. They went to see my mother. My family was all in the military. These pieces of whatever that come out of the military thinking that they should be getting all this credit. And they were attacking our own capital. And these people are getting away with it. And these people in prison, even those in the, that were in the military, are in prison. And they're serving life sentences. And like you say, on death row. Why aren't our leaders, our political leaders, trying to be fair about all this instead of going about their business like they have nothing to worry about? And everybody's taxes are going into these taxpayer dollars to fund these prisons, to fund these prison officials while they kill our loved ones. And here we are funding them. And the political leaders and the media and everybody's giving these people so much credit that that's what it is, prisons for profit. And I want to tell all of you people out there that have loved ones in that you're giving all this money to every month because they need it. It's because of all these loved ones that are giving their loved ones all this money that the Department of Corrections came up with the prisons for profit. Because even now, with this pandemic, with visits suspended, even now the drugs are still getting in. The prisoners are still on high all the time. And they're still writing to their loved ones to send money, claiming that they need it for this and that. Once you go into prison, the Department of Corrections, they have custody of you. It's their responsibility to make sure you get your medical treatment, your psychological treatment, to make sure you get your educational. All of these things now are falling back on the prisoners and their families, their loved ones, because of the girlfriends that are being used sometimes, or the wives, to send all this money in so that they can buy their drugs. And you go on the internet and you look up caught smuggling drugs in. The very people our taxpayer dollars are going to are bringing drugs into the prisons, and the very loved ones are giving their loved ones money unknowingly to buy these drugs. And politicians, get going. Start doing something that other than, oh, man, I get so upset. Because if I was in politics, I would be getting my peers involved. I would be doing everything to get my peers involved. So let's do something about it. Let's show these people that we're true leaders and not followers. We're not trying to impress one another. We're trying to do our job.
Yes.
I think it's time that people become humane again.
They never were humane. If they people are going to prison, a lot of them being set up, a lot of them being wrongfully convicted, a lot of them... Just put somebody in prison so we can get some money. And look at all these prisons that have all empty cells. All these prisons with all these empty cells, and here they are forcing prisoners to double cell. They know they need to fill those empty ones. They know that it's like coming from Africa years and years ago when they brought the slaves over. They packed the boats so much that the boats were sinking. All these people were dying because they couldn't get enough slaves over here to use them. That's the same thing that's happening in the prisons. They're filling these prisons with as much as they can with these prisons. They're packing them in like sardines. And what are we doing? Trying to get help from our leaders. Trying to get help from lawyers. Lawyers who decide to pick and choose who they want to help. And I'll tell you, there's some lawyers that are scumbags. Some lawyers that are scumbags. They gang up on people. If they hear about a prisoner being targeted, they will all join forces to deny that prisoner, to avoid helping that prisoner. And there's so many of those type of prisoners around the country. This is America. Shoot.
Yeah, and it's all, and that's, I think, what I find the most confrontational thing is it's all with on purpose. If you only look at the hierarchy in the system, when you are a student CO to the warden, there are 9 levels. So, you know, it's so easy to the bureaucracy, the hierarchy, with all these layers between them, It makes it so easy to play all these political hidden games to maintain the system, and it's done on purpose. It's not an accident.
Yeah.
People, it's
no,
choose.
Absolutely not.
And that's I think the hardest thing. If people are tortured, the torture in prison is legal. It's legal. And that's what people have to understand. It's legal. It can be done under the law because the law is designed that way. And that makes it such a dangerous institution because all these things can be done legal. It's not accidental.
No, it is not.
And that's why society has to ask itself, do we want to treat our citizens this way? Are they aware, and how far are they really aware of what is going on, and that what is going on, they pay for it, for torture, etc. And it's done on purpose, and that makes the system evil. That it is a choice to do this.
You know, I one of the reasons why I get so frustrated, and people don't know this, but my situation is not isolated either. There are people who raise their children to do everything the right way. And those children are vulnerable at times, and they can get caught up with someone who is rebelling against their own family, their own parent or parents. And they will do just the opposite of what their parents want them to do. So here they come across somebody of color that they know their family members are going to be furious about if they date them. And they will date that person, and they will do everything they can to get their parents so, so upset. And then when they've accomplished their own motive, then they will do something to cause that person to fall. The prisons around this country have so many prisoners, so many incarcerated individuals that were doing so good until they got caught up in one vulnerable, toxic relationship for the first time. And the prisons are full of people who are psychologically disturbed, people that are mentally disturbed, people that are on addictions, as I said in the beginning, there are so many reasons why these people are having these serious problems. But yet, it depends, too, on the type of families that are involved. Because some family members are coming from families that are connected with evil, mafia, and things like that. And they can make a person's life miserable. So I want the audience to know, I want everybody to know, when I was doing well, when everything was going very well, everything was fine. I used to look at prisoners the same, in the same light that many of you look at them, as hardcore criminals. Until, unfortunately, a tragedy happened. I felt bad for the victim or the victim's family, just as I felt bad for my own situation. Because now everything that we worked hard for all those years, helping others in our professions, were always either in the medical or psychological or social areas. And all of a sudden, everybody focuses on the one person that caused this whole thing and the one person that responded inappropriately.
Yeah.
These are the situations that happen. And this is why I get so frustrated. Because I know for a fact, I used to look at criminals, prisoners as being criminals myself until it happened in my life. And it can happen in anybody's life. And I say this all the time. It's like lightning. It can strike anyone, anywhere, at any time, in any situation. You can become a victim or you can become an offender. I know for a fact. And I'm telling everybody this so that they will wake up and understand. Prisoners should not be stereotyped. And when there's a trial going on, they should focus on, as Marion's philosophy is, the causes behind crime. And that's all I have to say.
Well, it is so hard. It is so hard, Leona, your situation and what you've been going through and continue to go through, like so many other citizens. I can't come up with the words to express my dismay that this is continuing to be such a prevalent issue. And I think you're right, media, to decide what is important to put out there. And unfortunately, if they don't see these facilities and institutions that are set up for punishment, if they don't see that, they don't report that. But they see very, very superficial things. They report on that. I agree. Why are they not reporting on something that really needs attention, and they need to be promoting change in our system?
And I think also there should be more become more awareness of taking care of each other, the responsibility you have as a society, and that even has not to do with crime, just in communities, take care of each other, look at each other, because I think that's too much gone. You know, it's also scary to think about that you have to live your life perfectly, that you are not allowed to make mistakes, because then you end up in prison or whatever. That's scary, because life means, falling down, getting up again, learning from your mistakes, taking life lessons out of it, and move on. That's living life. That is living life. If you cannot do that, then you should be a robot that cannot make mistakes. And it seems that in this society, you know, being different, making mistakes is not allowed. Then you are already rejected. That's a judgment. And that's a scary thought, because we cannot live without making mistakes, because we need mistakes to learn.
Yeah.
So, and if the mistake is a crime, then it's deeper, that you are going to be incarcerated, and you pay with some time of your life, which is the highest price to pay, because you have only one life. But that time, it should be used for rehabilitation, the same way as you also do in the free life. You know, if I make mistakes, then I have to learn from them in order to not fall back into the same mistakes. So that's natural, that's normal, that's living life. And that should be in prison. And I think the society has become so harsh and so judging and condemning, that scares me, you know.
Yeah.
We need room to learn. And I think society should stand up against that and give each other room to learn and to rehabilitate, etc. And what you see now with the prison system, that's also what I describe in the book. The United States is a democracy. Democracy is very vulnerable. That's what you saw after with the riot at the Capitol. And that's also the vulnerability, the vulnerable space within democracy is abused to build this prison system. You know, what we talked about before, you have what happened with the 13th Amendment, Southern Strategy is an abuse of democratic power.
Yes.
And that's really evil. This abuse is huge. And I think that's part of the answer of how this system could be developed and can be maintained within the lines of the law, that it can take place within the law. As you say, what you see with, you know, the Eighth Amendment, as you mentioned, Sandy, it's about, you know, the torture is forbidden and people have to be treated with dignity. Well, you don't see that back in the prison system. So I wondered, how is it possible that we have an Eighth Amendment and we have all this abuse in the prison system? And then I learned about, you know, there are prison rights, you know, that that prisoners can complain, they can fill in these forms. And then we see that nothing is done with, that the procedures to do so are made so difficult for prisoners. They have to do all these procedures first in the prison before they even have access to court. And amendments have to be are only in the Supreme Court. So what you see is these prison rights are nonsense because the procedures are far too difficult, and they are also played with by the officials. So they never get through all these procedures. So they hardly find their way to court, and they never, almost never, can find their way to the Supreme Court to fight for the Eighth Amendment. But you see, you know, that there is an Eighth Amendment. So the public says, hey, they are protected by the Eighth Amendment. They have prison rights because they have these the procedures to complain. So on the outside, it looks democratic. But on the inside, it's a totalitarian regime. That's the real danger. That on to the outside, there is one side of the coin, and that's rehabilitation, that's rights, that's humanity. But inside, it's the other side of the coin. And that's hidden behind the bars. And that's why it all can maintain this way. And that's what people have to become aware of.
I agree. You know, you were talking about people, the incarcerated citizens, filing reports about things that are going on within the system. And I spoke with someone the other day who was saying that when he was incarcerated, he filed a report, and that report, the guard looked at him, laughed, smirked, and said, yeah, good luck with that.
Yeah, that's what's happening.
That was a false report, or that was
It was an inmate filing a report against a correctional officer.
You know, there's always false reports wherever, always false reports wherever you go. There's an author, his name is Casey Sherman. Casey Sherman was going to write a book on a prisoner. And he, in the book, in the article in the newspaper, he was saying how he went to school with this prisoner. He did. He went to school with this man. And he said that no one could understand what happened because he had a good reputation. Everyone loved him. He was doing really well and everything. But he said he came out with a thing that we double dated together. Casey Sherman never even hung out with this prisoner. He went to school with them.
Yeah.
They knew one another. You know, actually, the young man that was in prison felt bad for Casey Sherman, because Casey Sherman apparently is a very short person, and people, I guess, in school used to make fun of him. But Casey Sherman put in there that we double dated together. This prisoner had never been involved with any girl. He ended up in a relationship in his last year of college. This was 4 years later, 5 years later. But this is how stories get around. This is how things are twisted. I came across some articles on the internet that said the prisoner had gotten an apartment in this area where the girl, the victim, was shot. And this prisoner never had an apartment. He was always away at college in a dorm. Another one said that the victim, it was a case of mistaken identity. The victim and her sibling were twins, but yet they were 2 years apart. Now, on Unsolved Mysteries, they had a picture of this young man because he had left the country. And the picture that they had, they doctored it up so bad it made him look so evil. No one even knew or recognized this person because they had him looking so mean. And I'm thinking that this is the way that these people do these things. They take a prisoner or an individual who has been a suspect or an offender, and they make them look, or her, he or her, they make them look so, so bad that everyone's going to assume that this person is that evil. These are the kind of things that people need to look at too. And then you have to look at the DA, the prosecuting individuals, who hide evidence. They don't present the truth. And sometimes they will call, they will take the witnesses that they know the defendant's going to, the defending attorney's going to call, because those witnesses are going to be speaking on behalf of that incarcerated or that offender or subject. So they try to get those witnesses quick so that the defense can't use them in court, which means that the very witnesses don't get a chance to talk about the good from their suspect. There's so many different ways that the prosecutor, so many different ways that others can make a person look 10 times worse than they are. So that's why I always say people in the communities, rather than judge, they need to see the entire picture. And if it means getting involved, if it means contacting the prisoners directly, that's why I'm in favor of the restorative justice, which is being talked about a lot now. Because if there's restorative justice, the prisoner and the victim or the victim's family have a chance to come together and talk and maybe resolve things, or at least allow others to see what's coming out of both mouths. Because when a prisoner is in court, some prisoners want court TV involved because they want the world to hear what's going on. But if that person, there's any doubt that that person was psychologically affected or was addicted or whatever the case may be, any prisoner, if they want their case to be on court TV, it should be so that the world hears every bit of it and they know the truth, rather than to keep it silent and bring in only certain media outlets or reporters, and try to keep everything within that, contain everything within that courtroom, so not everybody on the outside is hearing the truth. This is another thing that happens. And I'll tell you, when families of prisoners have gone through so much because of all this prejudging without knowing all the facts, it gets to the point where they don't care. In my situation, I could care less what people think, because I know in God's eyes that I'm doing the right thing. And that's the sad situation, because people that claim to be so righteous, they don't have a clue. And they don't leave it to God to give them the wisdom. They don't pray to find out the truth. And that's why I say God sees all and he will take care of everything. And that's the way I look at it now. And I need to learn myself to leave it in his hands, because sometimes I get so frustrated and angry at the way this system is, our political system, our national leadership, that I get really upset with it. And I know that there are so many people out there that have loved ones inside that are being abused, deprived, provoked, harassed, set up, kept in solitary confinement, kept on restrictive blocks, being tormented and tortured. Whether they're terrorists, serial killers, or anything else, no one deserves, once they get sentenced, to be punished or penalized more by people who should not judge and people who are also committing crimes that the public doesn't know about. And I'll leave it back up to you girls.
Yeah, there is a lot of manipulation involved in politics, in economy, in the prison system, and lots of people react out of emotion instead of going further than the emotion and think rationally and look to facts. And media plays with these emotions. I think that's also a form of manipulation. There's a lot of manipulation, and that makes it a dangerous game.
Very much so.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Leona, I think anybody that doesn't, that is not affected, you know, this is right to be affected in a negative way. And you know, it's sad that more people don't have your passion, because if that were the case, changes would be made.
Yeah, I think that society has to become aware of the fact that they are harming themselves with maintaining this system and this way of treating other human beings, their own citizens. They are harming themselves. If you look at restorative justice, there are three parties, and they are not looking at restorative justice, just look at who has done what, but there are three parties, that's the victim, that's the offender, and that's society. And they, all three parties together, they look at what harm has been done, what has to be restored. Then the accent is already different, the focus is different, because the judgment falls back. If you look at the regular punishment judging system, then it's about who has done what, and then you get into that judging. But if you look for restorative justice, then judging is further away, because the three parties look at what has been done and how can it be restored. And then you see that a victim has to go through his or her own process of healing, and on that path, the victim has to make a choice. Am I going to feel revenge towards the offender for the rest of my life? And am I going to be bitter and because I'm afraid of the pain, of loss? Or am I going through that healing process in which I have to deal with what has been done to me? And the offender has to go to his deeper justice process. Who am I behind this crime? And then there is society, and that's what you see in Norway. Society has to ask itself, what kind of society are we that this crime could take place in? Because the crime also tells something about society. There is a responsibility for society about these crimes. It's very easy to only point at one person. You know, if there is a murder in my village, then we as a village have to look at what has happened, and what does it tell about our village, us as a community.
Yeah,
exactly. You
and
know,
that's what you see, that society, which when society keeps pointing it's outside itself, then it fears to confront itself with its own vulnerabilities, own harm, and then it's not able to restore itself. And then you keep having this negative spiral of judging, etc., where what you see back in the prison system.
There was a woman that that went to visit a prisoner one time. She was from the same community as the victim's family. She knew of the family, and she mentioned some things, but I don't judge other people. I don't know what the family was like, but she met with this prisoner, and she said to him, "You have to be able to forgive yourself before anyone else can forgive you." Because that prisoner was so full of guilt. And in court, when people are in court and they get sentenced, the first thing the media will say is they didn't show any remorse, or they didn't have any reaction or whatever. What people don't realize, especially when it comes to men, they don't show their feelings. Men were taught not to cry. Men were taught to be strong. So these people may not show emotions in front of a media or in public. But so many prisoners I have seen cry. So many prisoners I've seen break down. So
yeah.
I don't know what in the hell these people are talking about when they say, the media especially, they show no emotions. What kind of bull is that? Sides. The media should be reporting news and not taking sides. But what the first thing that comes out of their mouth with every prisoner is they didn't show remorse. That really
yeah, and And it's crazy to expect a stereotype reaction. If somebody in court does not show emotion, then you have to look at the person behind the crime and ask him or discover why he didn't show emotions. There could be a reason too. Maybe he has a disorder which he cannot show emotions. Maybe he is indeed the man who has been taught that he is not allowed to cry. It doesn't matter, but because when somebody does not show emotions, and that's what I meant with that judging, that you have to suspend the judgment of, oh, he doesn't show emotions, so he is not sorry. No, you go back and you first ask the question. You try to find an answer to the question, hey, why does that person not show emotion? Because there are so many different reasons why somebody does not show emotions. You cannot simply fill in and say, oh, then he's not sorry. And that's with that short-term thinking. We look with all the emotions in ourselves and we judge. No questions. I miss the questions. First, ask and give somebody else the chance to answer. Think about the question. Answer to himself, answer to you. That's deeper justice. That's the person behind the crime. And that's missing.
Yes.
We have to be stereotypical. We are programmed.
Not to show emotion. We are programmed to be strong. We're programmed not to show emotion. And if, you know, I when I was interviewing somebody for the book, I said, you know, how did you feel the first night when they put you in that cell and you heard that door slam shut? He said, I turned and buried my face in my pillow and sobbed like a baby. And he said, I made sure to hide while I did that.
Exactly. So many have done that too. And another thing I noticed, and this is very important for people that are corresponding with prisoners, when some prisoners initially went in, their handwriting was so tiny, it was like they were so far away from the world. Their handwriting is very, very tiny. When you see the handwriting tiny, then something's wrong. When you see it getting bigger and bigger, it's almost, especially sometimes if you notice, prisoners, when they write, the return address will be their address. Everything will be tiny. The person they're writing to, the handwriting, a lot of times it's larger. It's almost like they want to be in that larger area. The body language, the handwriting, all of these things combined can give people ideas of what's going on. These people in the audience or these advocates or these loved ones who have loved ones incarcerated, look at these envelopes, look at the way the letters are written. Try to get some kind of an idea, because when somebody is in pain or somebody is hurting so much, their handwriting, their body language, everything changes. And these are some things that a lot of times people don't look at. And as I said, years ago, I was getting letters that the handwriting was so tiny, it was almost like they didn't think anything of themselves. That's how low they felt they were. As time went on, their handwriting got back to nearer to normal. And sometimes we can see what's going on if they're in a lot of pain, if there's something going on in the prison. And when you don't hear from your loved ones, it's a lot of times it's because they, even when the visits used to take place, it would hurt them when their loved ones left. It's almost like they want to go home. They want to be with their parent, or they want to be with their siblings, or they want to be with those who showed them love before. Even some foster parents, there were prisoners inside who were raised by foster parents, and maybe a foster parent, a couple that they really took as their own. And these are some things too. Now, when the prisons try to prevent all this communication, and that's what's happening right now in the prisons across the country, and I want everybody to know this. If you notice, the prison in Pennsylvania, if you write a prisoner in Pennsylvania, it doesn't go to Pennsylvania. It goes, you write the prisoner, but it goes to Florida first, and then it goes to Pennsylvania for whatever reason. When you write anybody, they're taking away the original letters, and they're giving them copies of the letters, and they're keeping, DOC is keeping the original. They're trying to use,
you know, the last,
it's to make
the last
money.
Two letters I have received, the last two letters I have received have been opened. Received them, they were already open.
Yeah, as I was saying, the DOCs across the country, these officials, they're trying to stop communication completely, and they're starting slow but sure. And if these little things that they're starting to do now are accepted and nothing's done about it, you watch and see if it doesn't get worse. So right now, copies of letters, not the original, when they get copies from their loved ones or families or friends or whatever, they're getting copies. They're not getting the original. They're not getting to have the visits. It's all video visits where they have to pay. Somebody has to pay for those video visits. They're not allowing anybody to go in. Lawyers can now start going in, and politicians can go in, but family members, friends, they can't. Anything that these prisoners want to buy from any vendors has to be bought within the penal systems contracted, like Securus, like Globotel. You know, these are the things. Holiday packages. They're selling holiday packages. They're not selling anything that anybody wants to buy, but the loved ones, people do not have choices because they're not allowed to buy from outside vendors. So what people are paying for, like $75, is for potato chips. It's for those little packages of tuna. What else do they have? All kinds of cold, you know, like little cold cuts, all kinds of junk food. You can go in a Dollar Tree and buy the exact same thing for like $10, where you're paying $70 or $80 to send a holiday package. So I hate to say it, but the best thing people can do is not to buy anything for their loved ones around the holidays until they see some changes in the penal system. Sometimes our loved ones, they either ask not to send anything or we have to make a choice. And what's happening right now is the more that the family members and loved ones are buying for their loved ones, the more the prison is benefiting and making it even worse for them. I just want to say that. We have like 2.5 minutes left. So, Mariam and Sandy, please state your information, how people can get in contact with you if they want to help in some way, volunteer, buy your books or whatever.
My email address is www.mariamjacobs67@gmail.com. I have a website, www.deeperjustice.com. I am on Facebook. I have a Facebook page called Deeper Justice, and I am also on LinkedIn.
Sandy? Is Sandy there? I see.
Yes, I'm here.
I thought I was unmuted,
but I was muted. I was giving my information, but no one could hear it. Yeah, so my email is sandyfreese63@gmail.com. My business is Victory from Chaos. I have two Facebook groups. One is Factually Innocent, and the other is Injustice, Reform, and Reentry.
Thank you. I want the audience to know that we have this is on every Wednesday morning at 9 o'clock Eastern Time, 3 o'clock p.m. Marion's time in the Netherlands, and there's a lot of valuable information that they can share with you. And I hope and pray that all of you will come in and listen next time. And please, if you have any questions, comments, whether it be negative or positive, please call in, because we'd like to hear from you on these subjects. This is very important. This is human lives, and I know that human lives have been lost. I know that people have suffered. We're living in a world where suffering is a norm, because everyone has to come together and try to learn to accept one another and not use, lie to, deceive, corrupt, or whatever, another human being. We thank you for this. Mariam, I thank you for being on with us once again. Sandy, I know the audience, everyone's getting familiar with both of you girls, so I hope your book is going to be written soon because I'd like to see all the content in it. I hope everyone's going to be back with us next Wednesday, and thank you once again, Maria, Sandy, and
thank
we
you.
Are going to be closing now. You've been great.
Thank you, too.
Have a good day.
Have
you
a good
too.
Day. Bye-bye.